Funpod.
Der sonnige Podcast.
Willkommen zur 188. Sunpod-Ausgabe, sagt Michael. Kaum zu glauben, dass man über Solarkocher in England eine Dreiviertelstunde unterhaltsam und informativ reden kann. Aber ich hatte nichts anderes erwartet, als ich nach der Consulfood 2016 in Faro mit Stuart McLachlan und Dave Oxford gesprochen habe. Denn ich hatte vorher während der Konferenz ihren gelungenen Vortrag gehört und mich auch schon ausgiebig mit den beiden unterhalten. Die beiden Solarkocher-Pioniere haben vor einem Jahr die Firma Slick gegründet, mit der sie die technisch fortgeschrittensten Solarkocher überhaupt, nämlich Vakuumröhrenkocher, verkaufen. In den folgenden 45 Minuten sprechen sie über das englische Wetter, die Eigenheiten dieses Kochertyps und auch, wie ihnen unsere Konferenz in Faro gefallen hat.
Hi, my name's Stuart McLachlan. I am one half part of Slick, which stands for Seriously Low Impact Cooking. This is an operation we set up this year in London. Last year, actually, it's now January. To try and advance solar cooking wherever we can. I've been solar cooking for approximately 12 years now in the UK, which is our base. Over to you, Dave.
I'm Dave Oxford. I live 300 miles to the west of Stuart, down in Cornwall, which is in the far southwest of the UK. And I'm a newcomer compared with Stuart. I've only been solar cooking for 5 or 6 years. I'm retired from the National Health Service, so I've got plenty of time on my hands. And this has become kind of a hobby for me. And Stuart and I got together recently and decided to educate the UK about solar cooking.
So you think it is necessary?
Well, in my last 12 or so years of putting together solar cookers and then becoming a little bit more sophisticated and professional, I've not really come across anybody else apart from maybe Dave in the UK proceeding with any kind of solar cooking knowledge, solar cookers, any information. I've not seen any at all.
Mm-hmm. I think one way of describing it is to say that if you go out into a park somewhere in the UK in the open so the public can have access and you set up a solar cooker of any type, people will come across and they will have no idea at all about what you're doing. Some people can't even guess what's going on. And it's as if Martians have landed with some strange device. And then there's sort of incredulity that the sun could be powerful enough to actually cook anything. And then there's a kind of disbelief. And people will try and touch something and you have to warn them that it's hot. And they still don't believe it. And then they burn their finger. And, you know, and this repeats time and time again. So that if you stopped 100 people in London and said, what do you know about solar cooking? Very few of them would have anything to tell you, and that's what we want to change, really. We just want to raise consciousness about the... even this far north, we're above 50 degrees north of the equator in the UK, and the islands to the north of the UK, it goes up to 60 degrees north of the equator, and we get about half as much sun every year as they do down here where we're having this interview on the Algarve in the south of Portugal. Mm-hmm. And so I think even if people do know about solar cooking, they don't believe it's possible in the mm-hmm. UK, and yes, it is, because we've been doing it, so uh-huh. that's what we're about. Uh-huh.
Before we hear what you are doing presently, I would like to hear a little bit more about your experiences. You say you started 12 years ago. Do you remember what your first contact was with solar cooking?
My first contact was really the internet and the Wikipedia, which existed at that time and which I could access for information, for plans, and to try and put something together. It was a hobby, a poorly formed hobby. I started making things out of cardboard and tin foil. I'd start to get some results, but nothing too good. And I've always been very interested in temperatures and data, you know, to try and justify what I'm doing. What I was trying to convince myself of was, is this something that can actually happen in the UK, or is the reason that nobody is doing it or has any knowledge of it because it's not really possible? It's not really a goer in my climate. So I started putting boxes together and, you know, learning the lessons with the amateur constructions, which started falling apart. We've got a lot of rain in the UK. We've got wind and rain. Sometimes you have all the four seasons in one day. Some of my homemade solar cookers would just get washed away. The cardboard would melt into paper mache and my efforts would be wasted. So I persevered and started to get some results over time. I started to develop an interest and chase around thrift shops, charity shops, you know, to pick up suitable vessels and containers and start to occupy an area with some old junk. But I did start to get some results. Eventually, I managed to scrounge, save up the money for a professional oven. I purchased a Global Sun oven around about 2008 or 9 or so. With this oven, I proceeded to acquire data. I proceeded to get some great results, especially during the summer in the UK. And I used the sun oven. I've used it in a couple of places in Europe, but mainly in one location in London. I developed a testing system using chickpeas, which I think 2011 I started taking data for cooking chickpeas to try and figure out how many days per year I could practically use a solar cook, to use my sun oven to actually solar cook and therefore save energy. I collected 2 years worth of data, which I put together in a study, which was actually published by Solar Cookers. I published at the Solar Cookers International Conference in California in 2013. I won't give you the full breakdown of that. There's a bit of detail there, quite interesting stuff. But I think it's you've heard enough from me for this question, so I'll hand over to Dave for the next.
So where it started for me was just noticing. I've had a long-term interest in environmental matters, and I was interested in solar energy. And I can't actually remember what triggered it, but I must have been reading about solar something, and I came across the idea of using one of those car reflective windshields that people use to prevent their car overheating in the summer. And I already had one of these. So I took it out in the back and cobbled a funnel cooker together and started cooking some beans. It may even have been chickpeas. I think it was chickpeas because they're very simple to do. And I wasn't expecting, I didn't know what I expected really, but I wasn't expecting them to cook as well as they did in the time that they, and I was just knocked out. And this was just, I didn't even put it into what I now know would be the correct shape. I just kind of put it in a roughly circular thing, and I still managed to cook these chickpeas. Admittedly, on quite a good day for it. I think if I'd have had a worse day, I may not have persevered. But that initial success then led me to do some research. The internet was available. I found lots of information about it. I decided to get a parabolic cooker, which I imported from France and that I'm very pleased with, but at the same time was reading all about cookits, the small panel cookers, and I managed to get my hands on a cookit, and I was amazed at how well it worked. Now, I know that the classic cookit is not meant to be usable 40 degrees north or south of the equator, beyond 40 degrees north or south of the equator. But I have boiled water in a cookit in July 2013, in Cornwall, you know, which is 50 degrees north of the equator. So it seems to me we've established that you can cook well north of the equator. Mm. You know, you may not be able to cook on as many occasions, but when the circumstances are right, yes, you can solo cook. It's no problem at all. Mm-hmm.
You said that you live in different parts of Britain. How did you meet?
Well, this is quite an interesting story, really. One of the first resources, apart from the wiki, Solo Cookers Wiki, was the Yahoo groups on the internet. The Solo Cookers group was reasonably well attended in those days, and I signed up for that as my interest grew in solo cooking, and occasionally posted and certainly read plenty of the posts. But there was nobody from Great Britain. So I was pleased to hear about another guy with a kind of name that sounded like Oxford or something, who was also posting on that wiki from time to time. And we made contact, chatted a bit, it worked out, Dave, didn't it, that we'd actually attended the same master's course, yeah. MSc master's course. What's the full name of the course?
The Advanced Energy and Environmental Systems course. It's at the Centre for Alternative Technology in Mid Wales. And Stuart had done this before me, quite a few years before me, but it's the same course. And we found that out only because another graduate of that course every year holds a big sort of green gathering where people from the course, alumni from the course, mm-hmm. attend, and you know, you'll have courses and things like rammed earth building and straw bale building and grassland management and all sorts of environmentally
construction related,
architectural, really.
Yeah, I'm an architect, so I completed this course in about 1997. So yeah, the direction is towards architecture and the energy and environmental issues in buildings. So that was about 97 I finished. When did you complete the course?
I was 10 years after you, so you know, quite a lot later. But we only found out because I said to Stuart, well, there's this chap from a course I did, and he has this thing every year, and it's not far from London, so you could get down to that. And you're all, you know, and you said, well, I've done that course. So we said, well, let's go. And that's where we met up with our cookers and gave a little display.
We did. We gave a little display there to people who were kind of quite knowledgeable on the old science of building and science of heat flows in constructions. And even those people were completely clueless about the possibility of direct thermal solar cooking using simple equipment in Britain.
It's odd, isn't it, that they made exactly the same mistakes. These are sophisticated people who've done a master's level course in energy and could have pointed to your thermal tubes on the roof and said, I know how that works, and described it to you. And yet when we demonstrated a tube cooker, they still burnt their fingers. They didn't expect it to be as hot as it was. It's quite odd. So what chance do the rest of the population stand of understanding it, unless it's disseminated more widely and people can see what can be done with just a bit of solar power and a solar cooker? It's quite interesting to me that even with that sophistication, people still don't make the link between you know, what they know and what's going on in your solar cooker. Yeah.
So maybe at your presentations you should place a parabola cooker aside so that they can make this link.
Yeah.
So say, maybe this is also something in this field. Okay. But you mentioned it, tube cooker, this is our main field of interest now. How did you get into it? How did it begin?
Well, another type of solar cooker suddenly, I suddenly became aware of a different type of solar cooker. I saw something on the internet. The internet is a massive source of information for everybody. And I noticed someone using one of these tubes, and I started looking around, and I found like a finished product, a cooker, a slow cooker, using a large diameter tube. And I sent Stuart a link to it, and we had a chat about it, and we got quite excited because, being as far north as we can, if conditions for solar cooking are marginal, we need to get a solar cooking system which extracts the maximum energy from the energy that's available to us. And this, because they're very efficient at collecting, at absorbing energy, these cookers are probably the most efficient solar cooker.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we'd investigate them. And mm-hmm. so we decided we'd like to get one of these tubes, and they weren't available in the UK in that form, suitable for cooking. There were plenty of them to stick on, long, thin ones to stick on roofs to mm-hmm. Provide domestic hot water. So we decided to try and get some from America, and we persuaded the guy who was advertising them on American Amazon that he could send us some because we couldn't get them over here. And he did. He actually changed the codes on his Amazon advert so that we could pay via PayPal to buy these and get them shipped over. He seemed reluctant, and I think we know now why that was, and that he saw the potential for them to get broken in transit. Mm-hmm. But in fact, they all arrived quite safely. So, you know, and the,
I got
the big
three,
thing...
You got one, and we had four tubes sitting in the UK ready to go. Probably the first tubes that arrived.
Of that type, yeah.
That were used for cooking in the country. We're very excited... But that's at this time.
But I think you have to tell the story about the proof of concept that went on that Christmas.
Yeah, well, you know, so we had these glass vacuum tubes with a nice size diameter, and it was late summer. So yeah, as the autumn fall, as the clouds came, the leaves fell from the trees, things got colder in the UK. The weather was changeable, and I'd established with my chickpea unit day exercise, which was published, I'd established that I could use pretty much the whole of the summer when it was sunny, and even some marginal days I could use my box oven to offset energy use, cook chickpeas on those days. But I'd also established that during the winter, the sun oven, the box oven type, was pretty useless, really. It tended to, you know, the sun moved too quickly in the sky, it wasn't powerful, it was too low to actually use. The outside temperature was also too low, so the energy flows from a reasonably warm oven box oven would just be, the heat gradient would be too great, and they didn't really do anything, so I tended to put it away. I was keen to see whether this new type of cooking system, potential cooking system, could actually work during warm days, sunshine, clear sunny days in the winter in the UK. You know, back to 10 years previously, I started picking up bits of old junk and, you know, shiny IKEA bins that people had chucked out. I made myself a simple trough parabolic reflector to mount my solar tube, my vacuum insulated tube in, and put it together. I kind of got it ready at the beginning of December. About 2 years ago now. Is it that long ago? It's about 14 months ago.
Yeah.
So not that long ago at all. And started to place it out in some low sun whenever it was sunny in that December. I managed to actually cook meat, burn meat, crisp stuff up. And obviously... collected as much data as I could on these experiences. But one of the particular winter, 25th of December 2014, the sun came out. It was a sunny Christmas day, on Christmas Day in the UK, the cooker gets a bit overloaded. The cooking facilities in my kitchen, anyway, get a bit overloaded because there's lots of stuff needing to be cooked at the same time. It's Christmas, and also, it's a very busy time with people running around. So I had my cooker out and ready to go. And I chucked in some sausages wrapped in bacon. I've taken a load of pictures of this and posted it up on our website, Slick Solar Stove. And after an hour or so, this dish came out cooked and ready to go, ready for the table, just in time. So I'd actually cooked, we call it pigs in blankets, so sausages wrapped in bacon. I'd actually cooked Christmas dinner, part of a Christmas dinner, using one of these vacuum tubes on Christmas Day. And this is kind of an amazing result. I think the global sun oven on that day would have just made a bit of food poisoning, perhaps, and warmed them up slightly. It's a great oven in the summer, not in the winter. The vacuum tube cookers, in my mind, from that time on, appeared to be something that's going to work in a UK winter when it's pretty cold.
Yeah, as long as the sun's shining.
Exactly.
Which it does sometimes, even in the winter. So, it was proof of concept as far as we were concerned. We now knew that even right next to the winter solstice, there was enough power in the sun, given enough duration of sunlight on a particular day, to do some serious cooking, nothing trivial, not just warming something up, properly cooking part of a meal at least, and maybe on other occasions a whole meal.
On a par with, a gas oven, oven box and hob, microwave, all these items were being used on that particular day, and a solar vacuum tube cooker. Very practically. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that I suppose that was when I got really excited about it, because you demonstrated that you could cook right at the when the sun was lowest in the sky, at our latitude, with one of these devices. And then we started talking about importing whole, finished cookers from China, which had started producing some quite neatly built little cookers with legs and built-in reflectors that close together like a clamshell round a tube, and just fairly convenient to use, convenient to pack up and move away. And we decided that we would import some in order to test them and see how well they performed, and also to look at the quality of them, see that they weren't just going to fall apart as soon as you looked at them. And then from then on, there was a whole saga of importing them to test, finding that a couple of the tubes were broken when they arrived, deciding about whether we should take the risk of importing a batch of them for resale. Because our intention really is to try and disseminate the idea of solar cooking in the UK, and we needed cookers to do this, and perhaps to sell to defray our costs and so on. And that's where we seriously began thinking about setting up, not so much as a business, but as an operation, so with a logo and all the attendant things, and a website. And Stuart had already had some experience of using a website to sell some clean cook stoves, and so we just adapted that. And actually, our entry costs were extremely low, because all we did was to adapt an existing website, use a laser printer to print some logos onto a bit of plastic sheet, and we were away, really, weren't we?
Yeah, plenty of time. We put plenty of time into it, but in many ways, our time is free working on this particular project. You know, designing logos, like working on websites, and driven by the enthusiasm to try and get this information out to people in our particular zone, our area of the world, of Northwest Europe. We felt we were onto something that shouldn't be ignored any longer.
I want to go one step back, and please could you describe the key elements of a vacuum tube cooker? How does it look, and what is the physical principle of it?
Okay, well, a vacuum tube cooker, as the name suggests, one of the principal features of it is that it has a vacuum which cuts down heat loss. I suppose the distinctive thing about solar cooking is that you're cooking with light, you're cooking with electromagnetic energy from the sun, the solar spectrum, and when light from the sun, including the non-visible parts of the spectrum, hit something, especially an absorptive surface, that will be translated into heat. And so a solar cooker has two jobs to do. It must intercept light and turn it into heat, which it then needs to conduct into the food to cook it. But also, the other job is to prevent that heat going away again. As the temperature of the food increases, there's more of a tendency, because of the increased difference between the environment and the food that you're cooking, for that heat to go away by various modes. The heat can be radiated away, or it can be convected away, or it can be conducted away. And the vacuum tube is a tube within a tube. It's two tubes made of borosilicate glass, which has certain qualities which suit it to that purpose. And they are fused together at one end. So there's a gap between the two tubes. They're fused at one end. And then the inner tube has is complete, so it has a base on it. And the space between the two tubes is evacuated with a pump so that there's no air in there anymore, and that effectively stops most of the heat leaving the inner tube once it gets in there. The other very important thing, and the thing that's been the subject of a lot of research, is called the selective surface. So the light comes in through the outer tube, goes through the vacuum and hits the outside of the inner tube, which has sprayed on it by a thing called a sputtering process, a selective surface, which usually has three layers on it. The light is translated into heat, and as the outside of the inner tube heats up, it will have a tendency to re-emit heat in the form of infrared radiation. And so this selective surface is designed to be very good at accepting radiation absorbing it and turning it into heat, but very poor at re-radiating that heat in the infrared spectrum. And that makes it extremely efficient at keeping that heat inside the tube once it gets there.
Mm-hmm. There are some other aspects of solar cooking generally, which are more ergonomic. Obviously, we've got our tube, we've got our reflectors, but how do we integrate that into our living and kitchen or cooking system? So we had to look at something that's going to work for both of us, something that's going to work for people in the UK. So it's got to kind of be waterproof. It's got to be relatively windproof. You know, I'm not talking about standing up to hurricanes, but it's got to be able to tolerate a few gusts of wind. We get all this. there's got to be something that can, you know, stand up away from the ground and be adjustable. Like everywhere else, we get different angles of sun. You know, it has to be directable so that we know we have something to know where the sun's coming from, that we're in the best place. We positioned it, directed it in the best place to receive as much sunlight as possible. And certainly for me, I don't have so much storage. I want something that's going to fold away when it's, you know, when it's a couple of weeks of cloud. There's no possibility of solar cooking, the cloud's so thick. So yeah, weatherproof, demountable, foldable easily, something that I can carry, so it doesn't want to be heavy, has to be reasonably robust, and it has to be easy to put up and deploy when the sun's, you know, promising to come out. I also want to be able to leave it unattended if needs be in a sheltered location, because, you know, cooking in the UK, you know, the sun might be in and out of the clouds, so we might have to be out there for an hour or two with something. I don't want to be out there with it because it might be a bit cold. So, you know, unlike a parabolic cooker, which needs to kind of be attended and refocused quite regularly, but has a lot of power, I want something I can kind of most of the time leave unattended. I want something that I can put away. I don't want it to be affected by the weather. These are things I've learned over quite a bit of time in working in the UK on solar cookers. And so we alighted on a particular design, which we looked at, so we tested a few times, and with a few breakages, we got ourselves into the a rather scary position of importing a bunch of them into the UK for immediate sale. It was late September by the time we got them in, which is not the ideal time to set up a solar cooker operation in Northwest Europe. But we've been, you know, we've been working with these for quite some time and having our, you know, our experiences, which have brought us to this conference this weekend, and we've reported back on those at the conference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how can I or shall I imagine how you cook practically? You have this tube with the reflectors around, and then, for example, I want to cook potatoes. What do I do?
Okay, well, the diameter of the tube is quite narrow, so it's about just over five centimeters.
The inner diameter.
So, and that's where you've got to put your food. So, yeah. Consequently, your food has to be either long and skinny in the first place. Sausages, for example, yeah. Or you've got to cut it up.
Yeah.
So potatoes, which is your example, you need them either of the right circumference to get in a 5 centimetre hole, or you've got to cut them into chips or something like that. Yeah.
How do you get it into the tube?
There's a food tray, which is like an incomplete pipe. So it's like a pipe with the top shaved off it.
Uh-huh.
So, and it has a handle on one end that enables you to hold it when it's hot.
Yeah.
And you just feed it down into the pipe, and it becomes almost completely blocked off at the handle end, so that the heat isn't going to escape very easily there.
Yeah.
Although there are tiny channels cut in the handle so that steam can escape, because once it reaches 100 degrees centigrade, there will be
mm-hmm.
steam, and it will escape.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you've got a bomb if you seal it completely.
Okay.
Obviously. So you prepare your food that you're going to cook, and you make sure it's of the right dimensions, i.e. no bit of it can be more than 5 centimetres in that dimension. And you put it in, and then you just shove it in. The tube comes complete with a small thermometer, like a meat thermometer, except the spike of the meat thermometer is very short. It's about an inch and a half, maybe 4 centimeters, 5 centimeters, and the you can tell what's going on a little bit from that, but you do build up experience with the cookers.
Mm. And you build up a kind of knowledge of what's going to work.
Yes,
you know, it's basic culinary, basic cooking skills can be applied. So, you know, a kebab is a great thing, you know, on bamboo skewers. Kebabs work, they're nice and long. I've been cooking pieces of chicken in breadcrumbs, you know, in the way that I like it, you know, which sit inside that tube. Falafel, baked falafel is a working rather tasty vegetarian one. I regularly chuck in some eggs and some leftovers from the fridge to make an omelette, a tortilla. But really, the imagination's, you know, it's up to your imagination.
I mean,
if you can cook in a microwave or an oven and you can chop pieces into, you know, sizable chunks which can go in there, and you can keep an eye on it because you don't want to burn anything. They will burn your food, you know.
Yeah, they get very hot. I quite like baking with it, so as I'm in Cornwall, you can't go to Cornwall without having scones or scones, and so I cook scones in them. Of course, they have to be the right dimension to fit in the tube. Bread's quite good in them as well, although it has to be like a baguette, a French a long, thin thing. And you also have to work out how much it's going to rise while it's cooking, because you don't want the tube to block. But once you've sorted that out, it cooks bread very well. One thing that's very evident about it is that towards the end of the tube, away from the handle, it gets hotter because there's no heat loss down that end at all, really. All the heat loss, if there is any, is near the handle. So therefore, there's a temperature cooking temperature gradient within the tube. So if you're baking bread, which is long and thin, you'll find that the end of the bread that's away from the entrance to the tube is baking quicker, and so you have to take it out halfway through the bake, turn it round for an even bake, and put it back in. So these are little things that everyone has to adapt to the cooker they've got, whether it's a gas cooker, an electric cooker, a microwave. Mm-hmm. You get to know how it works, its characteristics, and so on. Yeah. And it's no different with a solar cooker.
Yeah, okay. I think this type of cooker is very new for most of us, and have you compared them with, for example, a parabolic cooker concerning the cooking speed?
As you know, the amount of energy available to you is proportional to the area, the aperture of the cooker. It would be possible to have a much larger aperture with the cookers that the evacuated tube cookers that we're using. You could just design a longer parabola and reflect more light onto it. A parabolic cooker, I've got one which is just over a meter. It cooks very fast. I reckon it's probably about 600 watts, 650 watts. The cookers that we have, the evacuated tube cookers, are around 200 watts, mm-hmm. according to my calculation. Mm-hmm. So you haven't got as much power, except that once you're heating the food, it's not losing temperature hardly at all.
Yeah.
Mostly when people use a parabolic cooker, they don't have any kind of greenhouse. They're not paying any attention to escaping heat. And that's because if your parabolic cooker is big enough, you've got more than enough temperature there to cook with. So you don't really have to pay much attention. It's like people using their hob in the kitchen. We don't tend to try and insulate in the kitchen when we're cooking in a conventional kitchen, and you don't really need to on a parabolic either. So in a way, they're not in competition with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you wanted to cook if you wanted to fry something large, you'd use a parabolic if you had one, and if you wanted to do almost anything else, you could use one of the evacuated tubes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they should be thought of as mutually exclusive, you know. I mean, in the best households, we expect that they would have a parabolic and a
and a box cooker,
and a
panel cooker. Yeah, the panel cookers are cheaper. You can have a few of those to boil liquids, to make warm liquids. You know, so what we have is a kind of high efficiency, you know, quite a tidy looking cooker that folds away, which we can deploy for kind of high value items like kebabs and such like. Yeah. We you know, can leave the parabolic in on a particular day, unless we need it for, you know, larger kind of groups.
It's the portability. If you compare a parabolic with the tube cooker that we're using at the moment folds up and can be easily carried. It's about 6 kilograms. Can be easily carried around, just like a briefcase, a slightly long briefcase. You can't do that with a parabolic, or at least you couldn't until that French genius guy, whose name I don't know. Mm-hmm. I saw a YouTube video recently of him arriving with a very, very small package and opening out a beautiful parabolic cooker, which I bought.
We don't know. This needs to be checked out, but it's looking good.
It's looking good, though. It's looking good on the video. We like it. Yeah.
I think I got a good overview, and that gives me the opportunity to come to something completely different.
Okay.
Yes, we are meeting here in the south of Portugal, and the conference is over now, and I would like to hear a little bit about your impressions.
Feedback about the conference?
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Well, for me, this has been a revelation. I had... I'm ashamed to admit that at one point I thought maybe it won't be worth coming. I thought, yeah, it'll be a room of 20 people who are a bit crazy about solar cooking, and maybe they'll just be blackboard covered in equations, you know, heat loss equations, and it won't be that good. Or it'll be about, you know, distributed cookits in Africa, which fails now and again, and why does it fail? And I couldn't have been more wrong. You know, I came here with lower expectations than have been delivered by a good margin. You know, it's been absolutely brilliant. There's been no what I would call kind of big willy contest going on about who's got the best design or who's got the, you know, who knows more about this or that. It's been totally cosmopolitan, relaxed, amusing, entertaining, exhausting, stimulating. And the other thing is I've now met some of my heroes. It's fantastic. People I've only read about, and I've met them in person and had a chance to talk to them. So for me, you know, it's definitely been a brilliant opportunity.
I must say I had a fairly open mind to the conference. Very much looking forward to what was on offer, because it was going to be the biggest solar cooking event that I've ever attended. I explained earlier about the kind of sparsity of solar cooks that I've come across in the UK area. It was great to get some Solar Cookers International support for me to attend here. It's a tricky one to get away in January, which is a kind of work time. But what we looked at when the conference was announced on the internet, on the Facebook Solar Cookers Network, we kind of chatted to each other about our experiences with the tube cookers, and yes, we had been collecting data, and we thought that we had something interesting that people might be interested to hear about at this particular conference. So when we applied a draft to Celestino of what we wanted to talk about, it was a very positive response. Mm-hmm. So as all systems go in marshalling or the information and data that we had, which is on the initially we called it the field and destructive testing of solar tubes, kind of reflecting where we were coming at it from. We changed that midway to durability. I think you changed it is a bit more scientific in the phrasing, but the testing and durability of solar vacuum tubes. We were right in presuming that people didn't have that information to hand here in Faro. Because our tube that we had on display, we brought three with us, you know, between us, and a couple more spare tubes just in case. Just to show the portability, I brought two tubes and a spare tube in a, you know, a hold bag, which didn't break. Nothing's broken here. That further demonstrates, that they are pretty durable. Except under the conditions that we've spoke about at the conference, our tube cooker was the only one here, surprisingly enough, on demonstration with, you know, a good 50 or so other types of solar cooker, if not more. In the 2 days attending, for me, it's been quite an exhausting experience in many ways, because I've really wanted to give full attention to what we were doing, and also what everybody else, all the fantastic things, some of which I've not heard of before, have been going on. This has been a great way of seeing that we're not alone. In our endeavours in solar cooking, there's all kinds of folks, some of who are willing to travel halfway across the world, not just a 3-hour flight from London, but halfway across the world to put all our heads together and provide information to each other about where we're going. It's still a small world for solar cooking, but this kind of thing is making that world a lot bigger with each step we take. So I'm very pleased. I still need to actually go home back to, you know, cold London, England, and sit down and let some of this sink in, and think about it a bit more before I can give a really full conclusion, because I still feel we're in the middle of it a bit. We're still talking solar cooking, and when I go home, it's going to be back to people not knowing anything about it.
Okay, fine. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Sunpod.
Der sonnige Podcast.
Positive Impulse für eine lebenswerte Welt, wie wir sie uns wünschen. Um neue Ideen bekannt zu machen, brauchen wir eure Hilfe durch Rückmeldungen und Unterstützung aus der Hörerschaft. Kommentare sind willkommen. Entweder über den Blog www.sunpod.de oder per E-Mail. Die Kontaktdaten findet ihr im Bereich Die Autoren. Finanziell könnt ihr unser Ideenradio via Flatter, PayPal oder Überweisung fördern. Details hierzu findet ihr auf der Homepage www.sunpod.de im Bereich über Sunpod. Vielen Dank für eure Mithilfe.